Hi there, I'm Mark Swallow, and I'm glad you are joining me for today's God Is podcast. Let's get started learning who God is. Thank you for joining me today from wherever you are and by however you listen, as we meet together coast to coast here in the United States and all the way around the world. A lot has happened in our lives since we last met, so let me begin today with a summary or a short review of what was said last time. We want to know what a spouse who is being abused by their husband or wife can do about this. The context is spousal abuse, and we're curious about action steps. Last week, we talked about the first action that should be taken, and that is separation. If you live under constant and repeating abuse, you should flee the danger. You should extricate yourself from the marriage, at least temporarily. This is not divorce. This is separation. Separation is the first step, but you may want to know, what about divorce? What does the Bible say about divorce for the reason of abuse? And I want to answer you, but just before we get to that, I want to finish what we began yesterday. We were talking about how hard it can be to prove abuse. Abuse in marriage can be hard to prove. I mean this basically in three ways. The first way abuse can be hard to prove is we have to discern who's telling the truth. Is it the wife or the husband? Often it's hard to tell. As Proverbs 18, verse 17 says, the first to plead his case seems right until another comes and examines him. Is there really abuse, as we have defined it, going on in a marriage? We better listen carefully to both spouses in order to discern the truth. It is important to know, because if we advise divorce where there is not abuse, then we're on very dangerous grounds with God. Abuse can be hard to prove because we do not always know who is telling us the truth. A second way in which abuse can be hard to prove is that we need to be careful to discern the difference between temporary outbursts of anger and abuse. We do not want to say that every time a man or woman mistreats his or her spouse, that is abuse and grounds for separation and divorce, right? Those of you who are married and honest will say, right. How many times have we lost our temper? But that does not mean we abuse regularly or repeatedly. Remember my definition of abuse. To abuse is to treat with cruelty, especially regularly and repeatedly. It can be difficult to prove abuse because sometimes a spouse will claim abuse where really there is not regular or repeated cruelty, but an episode, or even a period of time in which there is conflict in the marriage. Often what is required here is repentance for sin and some counseling to help your spouse work through and overcome the source of what is causing them to be so temperamental. Now, here on this point, I grant you that an abusive person is likely to take what I have just said and justify their actions. See, Pastor Mark says sometimes people just lose their tempers. That's all that happens with me. I am not abusive. I'm just letting off a little steam. So stop accusing me of something I am not doing. We just have some conflict, like in everyone's marriage. I can hear the justifications from here. And to this abusive person, I say, hold on, for this entire broadcast and podcast, you are manipulating my words and my meaning right now. I still say we need to be careful to discern the difference between temporary outbursts of anger and abuse. Because friends, advising divorce to intentionally break the covenant of marriage after all we have said about how much God values a one-lifetime marriage is very dangerous to do. Abuse can be hard to prove. And then there is a third way in which abuse can be hard to prove, and this is perhaps the hardest. And so I want to talk about this today. Abuse can be hard to prove because abusers are master manipulators. Abuse can be hard to prove because abusers are master manipulators. If you live with an abusive person, then you know I am right. Well, this ends our summary, and now let's plunge into this matter of manipulation. My prayer here, as it has been throughout this discussion, is to help someone tuning in. If this does not apply to your marriage, good. But remember, God calls us to help others for whom this does apply. There is something here for everybody. We should all be on the alert for Mr. or Mrs. Manipulator. In fact, we can find them in every context of our lives. They are at home, at work, in our church, a part of our social circles, and out and about in our stores, coffee shops, and cafes. And let me tell you a story. Because of time, I will have to give you part one today and part two tomorrow. This is a true story. I vouch for its authenticity because it happened in my family when I was growing up. I will not say which member of my family is the manipulator, but I promise you this was real. Let's give this person a name, a made-up name, and call him, let me pick on men here, Marty the Manipulator. We'll call his wife Margaret the Manipulated. Remember, I know women can be the ones who manipulate. Manipulation thrives in both genders. But we have Marty the husband, and he is married to Margaret the wife. Behind the closed doors and windows of their home, a fairly nice dwelling in a small American town, Marty is a very abusive man, and his faithful wife takes it. His manipulation of her began all the way back when they first started dating decades ago, and it continues to this day. Let me give you just one example of how Marty manipulates. There are many more. Remember, he's mastered this, but this is all I have time for. Marty manipulates Margaret by presenting himself to the public as innocent and his wife as guilty. Throughout the scenario that follows, you must remember that Marty is definitely abusive. He is verbally abusive. He is sometimes physically abusive, and he is always emotionally and mentally abusive. Remember that. As we catch up with Margaret, she has finally gotten up the nerve to go see their pastor at the church office. She and her husband are members of the Baptist church, and believe it or not, Marty has actually served as a deacon there. No one at church is aware of how he acts at home. In fact, at church, Marty comes across as quite a guy. He is charming, he is perceived to be kind, he is faithful in attendance and never misses dropping his money in the offering plate as it passes by. And he loves to tell a good clean joke and get folks laughing. When the service ends, he often makes a direct walk to the pastor to offer his encouragement on the sermon. Everyone loves Marty, but they sometimes find Margaret to be too stiff and not much fun. Margaret has had enough, and so she visits with her pastor. As she sits in his office and unburdens her heart through some tears, telling what it's like at home, he listens for a little while, but then stunningly and aggressively cuts her off. The pastor says her description of Marty is, quote, "not the man I know," and he brushes off the abuse. Well, Margaret, the manipulated, sits there, almost finding it hard to breathe. How is it possible that her pastor, her spiritual advisor, is not taking her seriously? She begins to feel that he thinks she's making the whole thing up. And then, wanting to get this complaint off his calendar, the pastor advises Margaret to go see a Christian counselor who also works in the church. He says that the counselor, that is his colleague, can probably be more helpful. Do you see what happened there? The innocent spouse, Margaret, is made to feel that she is actually guilty. Guilty of lying about her husband. Her husband, who is in reality the guilty party. She's stunned the pastor believes so much in the innocence of Marty. "That's not the man I know." Well, this statement rings in her ears as she walks down the hall to make an appointment with the counselor, as advised. To make a long story short, what happens in counseling is even worse. We better give this counselor a name. Let's call her Barbara. Barbara is a Christian. She's on the staff of this same church and a certified psychologist. Barbara is quite competent. She knows Marty from church, and she likes him a lot. But she has had some bad feelings towards Margaret associated with a church committee that Margaret serves on. So Barbara will counsel this couple she knows. The first session is just Margaret and Barbara, and again, Margaret works up the guts to say how she is being abused at home. Barbara listens, but then asks that Margaret bring Marty to the next session. Well, back at the house, when Margaret asks Marty to come to the counselor, wow, he blows up. He stomps his feet, his heavy hands land on the kitchen table. He's cursing, ranting, and raving at his wife. I am not going to see a counselor. Why are you pitting Barbara and the whole church against me? Why are you ruining my reputation? He's furious. He heads for the back door and slams it shut. Open and shuts it again so hard the house shakes. His whole attitude is like this for days. He makes Margaret's life a living hell. He's punishing her, you see. He's manipulating her emotions. What he is really trying to do is to get her to call off the counseling appointment, to cancel their appointment with Barbara. There is a method to his madness. Master manipulators always know exactly how to get what they want. But finally, Margaret does not give in. She's desperate for change. The appointment is kept, so Marty will have to change tactics. And when we fast forward a week, Marty has agreed to go. They're in Barbara's office, so it's Marty the manipulator, Margaret the manipulated, and Barbara the counselor or pastor. And what happens in that office is remarkable. We'll continue here tomorrow, following them into the counseling session. Abuse can be hard to prove because abusers are master manipulators. We'll put all this together tomorrow on God Is.
Thank you for listening to this God Is podcast. Drop me an email and tell me what you think. Mark@godisministry.org. That's mark@godisministry.org. Please do share this with others and be sure and join me for the next one.